Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is part two of episode 490 of the Distraction Pieces podcast, the three wise men of podcasting, myself, Adam Buxton and Richard Herring. I'll keep this intro brief. Let's just get into it, shall we? This is the half that's got a lot of redacted sections. So apologies for the annoyance and frustration. If you know me in real life, hit me up and I'll let you know exactly who we were talking about. but don't otherwise, I will not reveal Richard or Adam's secrets. And I love these dudes. They've both got amazing books out. If you're interested in that kind of thing, perfect stocking fillers, or perfect audiobooks for in that bit between Christmas and New Year when everyone's doing your head in and you don't really know what to do. We're brought to you as ever by speechofelementrecords.com. Patreon.com/ScroobiusPip and twitch.tv/ScroobiusPip. Yo, I told you all about all the stuff there in part one. If you've not listened to part one, go back and grab that. But yeah, until then, this is episode 490 of the Distraction Pieces podcast. Three wise men, Richard Herring and Adam Buxton. Before we run out of time, all three of us, one of the things I'd noted, all three of us came to the public eye for the first time as parts of duos. And you guys have played up some rivalries in the past and discussed. I did a podcast recently about Dan Lesac, and I felt so conscious that I was mean in it. I've been reassured I wasn't, but, you know, I love the guy. But we've had ups and downs over the years. So I want to ask Adam, what are your thoughts on Stuart Lee?
Well, I'll preface my comments by saying that I think that if people are able to, because double acts are so complicated and tense in so many ways and anxious making, that I think a lot of people just never talk about their relationship with their double act partner because it's too complicated and it's too tricky and there's too many minds to step on. I think that if you are able to talk about it, it's just a lot better for everyone as long as the other person doesn't hate you for doing it. So I always feel like if people are hearing me talking about Joe or Louie and being a bit bitchy, then they should understand, and I hope they do understand, that it's all, that the foundation of it is love. And I love them both very much, but I think it's useful to be honest about some of the times when I'm really jealous or competitive or disappointed or hurt by things they say or whatever, you know, because it's, everyone feels that stuff. Stuart Lee, I had a funny relationship. My relationship with Stuart Lee is that, you know, me and Joe used to be jealous of Rich and Stuart when they did Fist of Fun because they were doing what we wanted to do. They were doing a sort of very idiosyncratic show on a mainstream channel that had a lot of ideas and was quite edgy, but it was also funny and weird. And that's exactly what we wanted to do. So we felt competitive and that made me resist enjoying the work of Stuart Lee for a while. Also because I didn't like his, I just thought he was too kind of up himself and arrogant and sneery. And I didn't like that. I liked people who smile. You know, I think sometimes the hardest thing is to smile. I like it when comedians smile. I like it when anyone smiles. And it always used to wind me up in Edinburgh to see all the posters of the people kind of sneering and doing weird faces because it's like, oh, I'm not just a comedian. I'm kind of a edgy artist. And I just think, no, you're not. You're just a fucking comedian. And so I slightly got that vibe from Stuart sometimes. But then I liked him when he started to go a little bit more to seed because he lost some of that vanity and he was just started to be really more funny, I thought. So around the time when he did his whole, when he started doing stand-up shows that were like, that he did a whole thing about Scotch, calling Scottish people Scotch or something, which was probably a joke he nicked off you, Rich.
Yeah.
But
debatable. I can't remember who would that one. We both do it.
Anyway, so I gradually got into him a bit more. And I think I started to understand where he was coming from a bit more because I was too literal with his stuff. I sort of thought, oh God, he's very opinionated and judgmental, this guy. And I didn't really like it when he would trash other comedians and things like that. But then I started to understand, oh, actually, there's a bit more to it than that. And it pays not to be too literal when you're listening to his stuff. And so now I'm a fan.
If there was ever a man who makes sense in the podcast world, it's Stuart, because 90% of his stuff taken out of context is one thing, and in context is, because it's a whole long journey thing, I can completely understand that. But so, Richard, what are your thoughts on Joe Cornish?
I see. I don't really know Joe very well. I did used to. We probably felt the same about Adam and Joe as you felt about us at the time. Though I loved the silliness of Adam and Joe, and I think I've realised as time's gone by, having experimented with different kinds of comedy, that I think all the people I like are just purely silly, really. You know, Rick Mayall, really, and Morecambe and Wise, and whatever you're doing, I think comedy's job's got to be to make you laugh, and you can do serious things within that. But I really love pure clown, funny people, which I think Adam and Joe really was. Though Joe was the sort of more serious one of the two, and as time has passed, feels more like that. So I don't know. You know, I met him maybe the first time when Adam and Joe were on my podcast last year. And it's an odd thing when I'm so into Adam's stuff and have been through that journey with Adam that even though Joe, it seems like the absolute loveliest person, there's still a sort of feeling that no, I'm on Adam's side.
Team
Adam. There's not even a fight between you, you know. But it's I do like him, and I think and I love his films, and he's clearly a very clever man. And I love, but you know, and I love the, I think I love the relationship that you, the two of you have. And I love your honesty in being, you know, sometimes slightly jealous of it. And I think sometimes he's actually a little bit cruel towards Adam, or a little bit superior towards Adam. But I guess I'm living through some of my own issues by projecting them onto a different double act, in which I am the sort of sillier and cuter. Puppyish one, but he seems like a very nice man. And you know, with Stuart, things are a lot more complicated, and I think they're more complicated than anyone realizes, than he himself realizes, I think. So, you know, I think Adam's sort of right about his comedy, but when you're in the firing line of it, it's sometimes you kind of can't quite work out where the real Stuart Lee ends and the joke Stuart Lee begins. And you know, I've got a lot to process with all sorts of relationships that I've been in, but certainly relationships I was in the 90s. And maybe I process those via Adam and Joe more easily than I do via myself and Stuart.
Hey, speaking of which, I really loved your Sally Phillips.
Oh, man.
Conversation. That was amazing.
Yeah,
it was amazing. We were both very nervous about doing it. Me and Sally had been in a relationship in the 90s that sort of, I mean, it hadn't ended badly because it kind of carried on a bit as well, but we sort of had, it sort of was a very public end to it. And she did a show about me, but she was also in my show at the same time. But we, as foolish 20-somethings who were into each other, to be fair, we sort of carried on seeing each other when we'd broken up, and it was quite confusing. And I've seen her over the years, and we are, you know, we're friends, but I didn't know whether the podcast would be a disaster or what, you know, and it was interesting talking to her backstage and a little bit on stage, because our memories of things were different. And that's not to say one of us was right and one of us was wrong about the memories, but certainly in a couple of, like in the podcast, you talked about me having a poster of Julia Sawala above the bed, which I genuinely think she believes, but that didn't happen. I can 100% say that was not the case, because there was a sketch, you know, she's conflated the sketch which is still, it's still the same feeling, because there was a sketch about me fancying Julius Weller. I mean, we'd broken up, but with Sally, but that must have been difficult for her to cope with. But yeah, it was really a kind of healing and lovely thing. And again, cathartic thing to do. And, you know, I realized how much I loved her and still do love her, you know, in that way that you do love your sort of early. She was really my first proper girlfriend, I would say. And we nearly lived together and all sorts of things. And so it's kind of was really great to sort of have it out and to both apologize to each other, because I think at the time I was sort of the villain of it. But all that I really did was know that I didn't want to be I didn't want to get married yet. And broke and ended the relationship. The confusing thing was that because we carried on, I think her memory of when it ended is very different to mine. And so, yeah, so it's, I don't know whether it's a great thing to do for everyone. I don't know if it would work every time. People are saying I should get Julius Weller on, who was an equally kind of tempestuous, weird relationship, and I haven't really seen her since. But it was, yeah, 30 years, well, yeah, probably 30, nearly 25, 30 years on. It was a really, I loved it, and it felt very healing, you know, and also it makes your 20s look ridiculous as well. You know, I think we both knew that the right thing had happened.
Yeah.
And you're also aware that, like, you know, her son was there who was also amazing. And if you've gone a different route, then all those, you know, your kids don't, there's different kids existing and different things happening. So yeah, I think it was her and Reese on the same, Reese Shearsmith on the same night. And they were both absolutely cracking interviews and possibly the best double bill that there's ever been, I think, in the whole of relative. But it was just like one of the, and like you, Adam, sometimes I walk away going, you know, I wish I'd said that, or that one didn't seem to fly. Like last night's audience was smaller and therefore it was harder to gauge how it had gone down.
Yeah.
And you can, yeah, you know, but with that one, you walk away going, yeah, that was amazing. Something kind of special happened.
It's a prime example of what's so fucking brilliant about podcasting and podcasts is that is the only place that could have worked in the way it worked, with both of you comfortable and in control and no kind of producers trying to push things in certain ways or get certain reactions. I tried for years when I was doing music to write about my parents' divorce and I couldn't get it right. And then I had them both on the podcast and talked about it. And it's the first time I'd really sat down and talked to them about it all. And I came away from that just absolutely on cloud nine, because it was like, this was what I'd been looking for all this time. It didn't exist when I was trying to find the right art or platform to process this or discuss it. What it was these intimate conversations where we're just all grown-ups now. I was 16 when my parents divorced, and angry teenager, all these different memories of it, but also aware that I was steering into stereotypes of angry teenager, because I knew I could get away with more because my parents had split up. I bunked off a lot more. I did a lot more drugs because I was like, well, everyone's putting an arm around me and saying, are you all right? And, you know, this is a red flag to a bull. And yeah, but sitting down as grown-ups and discussing it all was the perfect platform for it. And again, it sounds exactly the same there with addressing a 20-year-old relationship, but safely.
But it's sort of interesting to do it. It's interesting to do it in public. You know, you might think, oh, I'll go and meet up with my ex and talk in a cafe and we'll talk it through. And we did talk a little bit backstage.
Yeah.
There were other people around, but we were both very open about stuff. And again, some different memories of how things had gone down, but we were both, you know, it was considered and friendly, and both of us apologizing. But I think weirdly doing it in public, you would think that would be a strange way of doing it. And it is, but I don't think it would have worked the same if we'd just sat down somewhere and had a coffee and tried to talk it through. I don't think we'd have got to the exact same place. I mean, I think we would still have been, there'd have been something, but there was something about it being a podcast and it being, you know, vulnerable and honest. But again, that it goes back to why I think, you know, Adam's podcast, which is, I've always thought it's fantastic. When those vulnerabilities came to Adam and it felt, you know, your heart was breaking for Adam, even if it was, you know, even if you weren't really pushing those buttons, you could hear the pain in your voice and you understood what you'd been through and it affected the content. And so as a listener, I think there's just something, you know, it's a bit on radio, but more so with podcasts, you're so invested in the people in it that, for right and wrong. And I think what we all do again is we're all, probably more honest about our own failings than we are than we are about others as well. So if we were, if the podcast was entirely settling scores or getting revenge or saying, oh, that it's not me, it was him, he was, you know, if it was all of that, and there's a bit of that in everything as well, I suppose. But it, but it's, you know, I think we're all quite hard on ourselves, or at least quite honest about ourselves. And I think that's, I think it's a really important thing for people to hear, because it's not a normal human reaction to admit culpability or to admit failing, which I think comedians do, but podcasters do it even sort of more intimately, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it was good because you and Sally are both performers and you're both funny and you both felt comfortable saying what you said in front of an audience and on a stage. And so the power relations were fine. You know what I mean? It gets uncomfortable when you can hear that someone else is uncomfortable and they don't really, they're not on board for a bit of public sharing. And they're like, why the hell are we talking about this now? Why don't you just,
why have you got me here for this?
Yeah. If you've got all this to say, why don't you ring me up? Why don't you behave like a grown up person? I'm not a grown up person. I've got a podcast and I want to have this conversation now because I think it'll be spicy.
Well, to kind of wrap things up, over the years, what comes to mind as your worst podcast moment? And one that happened for me recently, I was lined up to talk to an amazing director on Zoom. I'd sent all the kind of tech spec through and I got on the Zoom and they said, oh, we've not got any headphones. And also, we've got a translator here for the whole thing because their English isn't great.
That sounds
and I kind of said
ideal,
right? And I was like, what I would need in this situation is the translator and the guest to have headphones and so on and so forth. And they didn't have any, and they said, oh, we can go and get some. And I said, right, well, do you want to try and sort out the tech side and then we'll talk? And then I ended up emailing them going, shall we leave it, because I can't imagine doing an hour long conversation with no headphones over Zoom through a translator, essentially. I was just like, there's not going to be any way to edit it because they're going to be on the same channel and all this. I was like, nah. And it was a director I was really excited to talk about. I'd done really good prep because I get really nervous if it's a director or just someone who's a proper artist. And I kind of always feel I'm faking my way in all these industries. So I'd really prepped but I was really pleased to be in a place where I could go, should we leave it? Like, to feel comfortable in myself and saying, let's not put each other through this. So, yeah, is there anything that comes to mind for either of you guys?
Well, I got the opportunity to talk to a director who I was quite excited to speak to. And there was lots about his life that I was interested in. And I was really looking forward to having this conversation. I'd been in touch with him on Twitter when I was on Twitter in the olden days. And he'd always said, like, yeah, maybe I'll do the podcast. And then finally it came together. He had a new film out, but he had a PR team dealing with making the final arrangements.
Right.
And they were so obnoxious and they just treated me like a tiny piece of shit on their shoes. And it was just like, well, when's this going to happen? No, he can't do that. No, he can't do that. You can have half an hour tomorrow kind of thing. And this is after we'd spent months sort of saying, no, it's okay, Tuesday. Yeah, that's fine. But we need at least an hour. And that's how they are used to treating people doing junkets, right? Yeah. When you go out and promote a movie.
I've got really good at walking away from them. Like when they say, oh, it's 30 minutes, I go, okay, cool, I'll leave it. And they don't know what to do because again, exactly. It is generally they're in that control.
And it just got down to the wire. And then it was like, I'd sent them a Zoom link or something, and then I tried to connect. And first of all, the guy wasn't even there for a bit. And then he turned up or something. And then they were just like, oh, I don't know if he's got a mic. It'll just have to be on the mic. And we'd been through all this. It was like, have you got a mic? Do you want us to send you a mic? Blah, blah, blah. All this technical stuff that you do to try and make the thing as good as possible, right? Yeah. But they hadn't done any of it, and they'd lied to us about having sorted it all out. And they were still kind of chippy. They were sending these chippy emails. And I was so close to going, actually, you know what? Fuck off. You can fuck off. And the director, I still like the director, but he can kind of fuck off as well for not being a little bit more proactive and on it. And it was just such a all-around humiliating experience. And I went in and sounded off to my wife, and she gave me a... She gave me a good dose of perspective sauce and just said, calm down. It'll be fine. These things happen.
Weirdly, I've dodged a bullet, Adam, because I've got to the point that you said about talking to this same person on Twitter and saying, yeah, we'll have to do a podcast at some point, but never got to the PR people bit. So yeah. I get to have this beautiful imaginary friendship and relationship without having it. It's soured. This is now going to be a big bleeped out section of the podcast in general, but I've just remembered one, and it plays into Richard here, because I had all my podcast gear and I was at a hotel to talk to
Redacted,
amazing actor, and they came out, they'd pushed it a couple of times, and they came out to me just before, they said like 10 minutes, so I said I'll start setting up my gear so I can get the most of my time, and they came out with 5 minutes to go and said, we're gonna have to cancel because she's sleepy. And I was like, what's that? Sorry, I've come all the way into London for this. Like, yeah, she's really... And it was jet lag, so I do actually get it, if you're jet lagging, it's this. And then the podcast before came out and said she was laying down for the whole podcast. It was really hard to make it work. And it was...
Redacted.
Who came out and let me know. It's like, it's probably for the best. And again, there was a level of understanding, because I'm a very calm person, that jet lag can be a nightmare and all this, but to be there and set up and have them go, with 5 minutes to go, we're going to have to reschedule because she's very sleepy. I was like, all right, cool. I'm going home now. Bye. But how about you, Richard? Obviously, there's an infamous one that never got released.
Redacted.
Was weird because it was so good, yeah, and he was so funny. And I think... He maybe just got insecure, you know, I think he just maybe had insecurity as the time passed by, because we say goodbye, he was lovely.
Yeah.
The problem was we'd arranged to meet him, because with big stars, we tried to bring him in the back entrance so they'd have to go through the audience, which in the Leicester Square Theatre. And there'd been a mess mix up, and he ended up, we told the cab to drop him at the queue bar, but he ended sitting in the queue bar, which is around the corner, right, for about half an hour, and we didn't know he was there. And so he arrived just before he went on. We didn't really have time to talk to him. And then I don't know to this day whether he got upset by anything I said. Halfway through, he said, "Why, you know, what, you usually have comedians on. Why do you have me on?" And I joked, because it was going so well. I said, "Oh, we sometimes have people who aren't funny on, you know." But if it's going so, it's going so well, I would honestly put it in definitely the top 10 podcasts, maybe the top 3 podcasts, in terms of we've got some good stuff out of him.
He's
the
amazing.
The audience loved him. You know, he got the ovations. You know, it's usually what you get these legends on, and then they can't believe the love in the room for them. And that was completely there. And he was funny. I think it could be his PR people. And then I think people were worried about his reputation in Hollywood.
Right.
So I think they just thought there was a few conversations about he caught
Redacted
wanking on the set of
Redacted.
Something, there was a few things like that. But I said to them, you know, tell us what's the problem. We'll cut out anything. If we don't put out anything, it's going to become this legendary thing. But he also blocked me on Twitter. I tried to get in touch with him, but I found he blocked me on Twitter, which he hadn't done before.
Oh, wow.
And so it was like he didn't even want to have a conversation about it. Because I would have direct messaged and said, look, it's great. Just tell me what's wrong. We'll take out the thing that's wrong. And I would have said to him, you're going to have people tweeting you in 5 years' time, as is completely true. It's going, where's the fucking podcast? And it'll be a nightmare. If you put it out, it'll be forgotten. You know, it's not the kind of thing that comes back to haunt you. And there wasn't really much that he, you know, I'd listened to loads of podcasts with him, and he didn't really give me much stuff that wasn't in other podcasts. So I don't know with that. I've had a few. The last one with Stuart was really weird. Stuart was a little worse for wear and quite unpleasant. We had to take stuff out, and that was sort of the opposite of the Sally Phillips one in a way.
Yeah.
In that I think we were getting on okay, and that kind of pushed us apart a bit, because he was sort of so weird in that one, and we cut loads of it out.
Redacted.
was a bit weird, but I think we've made friends and he's going to come on again, I think, at some point. And I think it was only for a few minutes. I had one on tour with a musician who was from the area, but then I'd booked him because I knew he was from the area, but he'd come up from London for the gig, which was a good train ride away.
Yeah.
And he'd obviously had a whole night of it, right? So he arrived really early and said, can I just have a lie down? I've been out and out. And I didn't twig that anything was up. I just thought, oh, he's tired. I said, you could go and lie in your dressing room. And so he went and slept in his dressing room for a couple of hours. And when I sort of went to get him 15 minutes before the show, and he seemed okay. And it wasn't until he got on stage that I realized he was out of his nut.
Right.
And then we did an hour chat with him, and it was absolutely awful. I mean, he was just horrible. He's a quite affable guy, nearly usually, I think. And I think he'd fallen off the wagon or something like that.
Right.
And was rude to the audience. The audience were very patient with him. It's a lovely venue and a fantastic audience. And he got a little bit of a head. And I was playing a blinder because I was keeping it going, being polite enough to him, but, you know, letting the audience know that I knew this was weird because there were some weird stories. And then someone heckled. And he was going, what was that? What was that? And he was sort of angry with the heckler. And then someone else said something. And he was all at the end, he was sort of trying to go down to the audience to find this person who hadn't even heard what they'd said. So, like, you know, it was like absolutely horrible. He said, I'll be kind to me in the edit. And I said, look, there's absolutely no way I can put that out without it. Like,
there is no edit.
There's no way of editing it to make, you know, I don't think he had any. He was just came across as nasty. He repeated himself. You know, it was annoying because I did an absolutely amazing job of keeping that going and keeping it amusing whilst. But also kind of, it was like, you know, having an animal on stage with you or something that might attack you at any moment. Just horrible to everyone.
Wow.
And so that was, but it was sort of magic. And also when things like that happen,
redacted
one, and that one happened, it's sort of good for the podcast because people know that if they don't come and see it live, they might miss out on something.
Yes.
It was an extraordinary night. Luckily, two interviews, the second one was brilliant, but you would remember that experience for the rest of your life. And people do often tweet me and go, I was there, I saw it. And he sorted himself out at the beginning, you know, I think he was like a big fan of the podcast. And I think he just got overwhelmed with, you know, sometimes people drink a little bit too much.
Yeah, usually
it's okay.
He probably wound himself up because he was nervous. That can be the thing. Sometimes people just don't know how to play it. They start second guessing themselves, and then it's a bit like sometimes after you do a gig and people think, oh, this guy's a comedian, so I've got to try and be funny with him, or I can't just be nice because that's too boring. So I've got to be a bit weird or edgy. And then definitely
with mine as well. I think people think, because it can be a little bit controversial, they come on and they're just a little bit too rude. And they actually, you can be rude to me and it's fine. Most of the comedians get the level. But I think when it's not a comedian, it can just suddenly go, okay.
I used to get that all the time around where I live. And there was a kind of era where you had your Frankie Boyles and all these who were amazing but offensive comedians. And loads of people around my area got the offensive bit, but didn't necessarily get the comedy bit, and would just say something fucking horrific. It'd be like, I'm only joking. It's like, right, there's not a joke there. You've just been really horrible. And I think that probably happens in those situations as well. Where it's like, I'll say something edgy. It's like, no, that was just mean. That was just...
It's weird because the audience love it when people take the piss out of me. But, you know, it's sort of such a, you know, comedy's such a tightrope, and it's all about intent, and it's all about, you know, it's all about the moment. And if it's the wrong moment, it just becomes like a weird thing. But I kind of like that. I like the awkward ones, and I like trying to get out of the awkwardness. And usually we do a pretty good job. If you get someone who doesn't talk much, you know, Mackenzie Crook was like surprisingly hard to get talking. And I said, you know, I said, you're in Jerusalem. That was a fantastic play. What was that like? He goes, yeah, it's good. There must be a story from Jerusalem. I'm just punting you up to do a story from Jerusalem, you know. But in the end, it was okay. But
I was going to say, but how rewarding is it when you get that breakthrough? I always say one of my favorite ever episodes was Mary J. Blige, because for the first 20 minutes or so, it was real press junket type stuff. It was clearly the stock answers. And around 25, 30 minutes, there was just a breakthrough and it became a conversation between two people. And it means the world to me because it was one of them. It was one of the first ones I was sweating a bit. I was saying to you before Adam came on that I still think your emergency questions are the greatest tool in podcasting history because it allows you to go, I'm sweating here. I'm just going to throw in something pre-prepared and bonkers that the crowd will always react to because they know the set ones and things like that. And yeah, there's been a few junkety type ones where I've felt that kind of, I'm like, oh man, I wish I could ask if you'd rather have a hand made of ham or an armpit that dispenses sun cream.
But that's the thing. I think they need to, you have to get to a point with some people, especially if they're big stars, where they are able to bust through that junket barrier.
Yeah.
And where they realize, okay, this isn't, I'm not on Graham Norton. I love Graham Norton. I love watching that show.
Yeah.
But it is, it's an artificial environment and you're not having a real conversation there. And, but there is a possibility, not to say that you don't ever see anything kind of real and, moving or whatever on shows like that, it can happen, but it's much harder.
Yeah.
And on a podcast, there is much more of a possibility that those moments will happen. And when they're able to relax and realize, okay, this isn't just one of these junket things and let themselves go. I had the same sort of experience that you described with Mary J. Blige with Nile Rodgers.
Yeah.
He wasn't even looking at me. He was just looking at his phone and giving me the stock answers and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was getting a bit peeved because that, again, that had been a hard one to put together and to coordinate. But it's like, well, he's one of those people you can't really say no to, or I didn't feel I wanted to say no to. And eventually, I think I proved to him that I'd read his book and I dropped enough clues that I actually was invested in him and his work.
It's the proving, isn't it? The breakthrough with Mary J. Blige was when somehow we got onto the topic of Biggie, and I knew that she was the first person to feature Biggie, and we could get into this deep hip hop discussion to the point that I was confident enough and I was ready to be thrown out by the PR at this point, because I asked her about R. Kelly, because he first guested on a Mary J. Blige track, and obviously this was just at the time he was being accused of horrific things. And she spoke really beautifully and delicately on that subject. And again, it was one of them where literally 10 minutes ago, I was like, I'm not going to get anything other than the stock answers, to that point where we've feels like we've broken through enough that I can ask kind of tough ones. But yeah, similar there with Niall, him realizing you've actually read his book and can have a proper discussion.
It is interesting with, because I don't do that, you know, I don't do quite the same thing. So it's nearly always people I know or know of, or it's a certain situation. So I'm not doing that junket. But I guess the start of a lot of it for me was we did Just for Laughs, and we did the TV coverage from that, Stu and me together in mid to late 90s. We did a couple of years and we sort of did this. We had to interview a few people. We did this thing where Stu would ask a sensible question, then I would ask a weird question. And I guess this is where, like, a lot of the stuff came from. But you could see, is it Leah Thompson who plays Michael J. Fox's mum in Back to the Future?
Yeah.
She was doing it, and Stu asked her a question, and you could see, she's in the boat. Then I said to her, do you think Space Camp could ever happen in real life? Which was the film she was in about some kids getting in the space shuttle. And then she went, and she like completely like relaxed, went, oh my God, that film came out the week of the Challenger disaster. So she told us this amazing story about having been in this film about so we got there, and you could see her noticeably relax. And also Moon Unit Zappa, who I didn't know anything about Frank Zappa. In fact, I didn't even know Frank Zappa was dead when I interviewed her. Wow. So Stu was being like really, was very excited about meeting Moon Unit Zappa. Yeah. And they were talking about the one where she came down from, he got her out of bed to be in the Valley Girls, sort of doing a Valley Girls impression in one of the songs.
Right. Yeah.
And I said, your dad sounds horrible. she really loved it. And in fact, I didn't realize till years later, completely started flirting with me in the interview. I saw her in the bar and she said, write this down, and gave me a phone number, and I still didn't know that she was flirting with me. And that would have, if I'd married Moon Unit Zappa, Stuart Lee would have been so annoyed. So I wish I'd done it just for that.
I love that as I said, when it clicks like that, but sometimes it can backfire. I had Spike Lee no comment me. The only person I've had a no comment from, and it was Spike Lee. And I thought that we were proper relaxed and I could bring up some more awkward stuff. And no.
What did you ask him about to get the no comment?
Well, he was doing the press tour for BlacKkKlansman, and Boots Riley the day before had done a big blog, and I know Boots a little bit from touring days and from music, and he'd done a big blog about how BlacKkKlansman was essentially propaganda, and it was because the activist group that the story was about, Boots's family were in, so he grew up in this activist group, and there was infiltration from the police to pretend to be on the side of the Black Power group. There was infiltration on the Nazi groups and all this, and BlacKkKlansman addressed a lot of that, but Boots felt it was really kind of gentle on the police side of it and almost supportive of the police side when they actually got up to some dark shit. So I thought, it's come out this morning, like, it's all over Twitter. He's going to be very aware of it. No one has told me not to ask it, so I thought, as I know Boots, it'd be weird not to. And yeah, I brought it up. I proper rambled it as I did then, and you know, I see both sides of it and this and that, blah, 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 blah. Rambled on for ages before I got to the end of the question. And he just said, I've got nothing to say about that, I'm afraid. And then I was just clambering through my notes. Cool. No, that's all good. So horrible. But again, perfectly in his right. He's not going, he doesn't have to answer to me. It was a weird one. Well, I'll wrap things up. Gentlemen, I guess I'll ask what's ahead. Richard, you've obviously got the new book.
I've got a new book, Can I Have My Ball Back, out on the 20th name. Of October. I don't know when this is going out. And just obviously more podcasts coming out of my wazoo, Rahalastapa being the main one.
And Adam, what is ahead? This will be coming out beginning of December, so ahead of the presumably usual Christmas episode.
Yeah, festive fun with Joe Cornballs Cornish. And it'll be coming up to the 200th episode, and I'm supposed to reunite the, me, Joe, and Louis for episode 200. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. And then I'm going to take a break in 2023 and try and write my book and also try and finally put out some music, I've been threatening to do for a long time. Well, I don't know. You mean like, what's the sort of, what form will it take?
What kind of music is it? What's going on?
Oh, it's bad music. Yeah.
Excellent.
I've been trying to think of a name for it. And I've been thinking of things like not music or, you know, just annoying sounds. But it's like, it's going to be weird. I don't know. Yeah. It's been a journey. And it's still like, it started off being trying to do funny songs, like the kind of songs I used to do with Joe, but then not feeling it really. And just having such a strong yearning to occupy a slightly different space that was a little bit more ambiguous and a bit more possibly serious or heartfelt. So I'm trying to do songs like that. Anyway, it's been such a long time since I actually was asked to make some music by this record company that I'm embarrassed now that it's taken so long. So I'm hoping that next year might be a giant dump of content.
I love it. I'm excited. And the jump it must be to kind of not be able to use the comedy side of things as a safety net as such, or a blanket. It's, yeah, that must be a huge change and jump on the music front.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to like it.
That's perfect. That's the best starting point. Record label, every release we did, we'd celebrate when the artwork and masters were submitted rather than when it came out or when we got a chart position or when we got reviews in, because the act of completing it and being happy with it is the bit that needs to be celebrated. Everything after that is completely subjective and out of our control. So, yeah. I recommend when you're done, have a nice glass of something and be proud of yourself.
I'm going to have some Malwam.
Sneak some Malwam. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. This has been an absolute pleasure. I'm glad we got to chat.
Oh, likewise. Thank you.
Thanks, Scroobius. It's always nice to see you guys. Good to see you too, Rich.
And you.
For all of this, every time I've been talking to you, Adam, I've held hard eye contact with the photo of you at the bottom there. I don't know why. I've not been able to look away. Just real hard eye contact.
Here he comes. Look.
There he is.
Exactly the same.
Well, thank you, gents. It's been a pleasure.
Sure. Hey, let's take a picture of ourselves.
Yes, let's.
1, 2, 3. There we go.
Great.
Beautiful.
Oh.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Richard and Adam. I don't have to say I hope you enjoyed that, because you did. They're brilliant. If you didn't catch it last week, the episode with Polar Bear and Moosarok Wonga was a lot of the same, you know, a lot of just having a lovely chat with people I really respect and enjoy. So I'm lucky I get to do this. And I'm lucky that you lot let me do it. So once again, thank you all for all the support this year. We got a couple more banging little episodes to come, so don't you worry about that. But yeah, until next week. Oh yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, I've got a DJ set this weekend. It'll either be Friday or Saturday night, and it's on Twitch, so you can tune in anywhere in the world. It's going to be 9 p.m. Keep an eye on the socials. Tune in for that. It'll be lovely to see you. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta, and Merry Christmas. I mean, I know I've got an episode before Christmas, but seriously, Merry Christmas. All right, see you later. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Oh, and sorry about all the redacted business. Probably proper annoying, right? Although they do that a lot in Chatterbix, and I love it. It cracks me up. But yeah, anyway, I got to go. See you later. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.